Welcome to Starfleet Universe Encore. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFN Online, Fed Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just reminding how to join us by TalkCast every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for Quality 17702 or Starfleet Universe on call or SFU on call. You will find us there so you can listen to us. But if you want the true, best online experience, go to twitch.tv. Yes, we're over on twitch.tv. So go to twitch.tv/SFU on call. And you'll find us there. You'll be able to join, see my lovely face, listen to my melodious voice, and also, of course, join the chat room, and which is one of the best chat rooms on the web. So, and if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Yes, that is correct. And of course, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me on SFU on call if you're still on Twitter. Also, Paul Franz, PaulFranz, and of course, Franz Games. Now, I'm trying to post as much as I possibly can. They got rid of my third party app and they got rid of my. So, the only way I can currently log in is via the website, and Lord knows that's always a pain to log in. Because I don't like staying logged into Twitter. So I might log into maybe once a week. So I'm decreasing the amount of I communicate on that social media site. So hopefully, the best way of contacting me is SFUOnCall. Also, of course, if you want to, you can join a Discord server and join the happy band over there. That's going to be. It's actually for SFU Online, but I do have rooms. Places for Starfleet Universe on call that you can communicate there. Now, quick news from ADB this week, which is not much. It's all been quiet. I'm sure it's heads down working on FedCom gunboats attack. Also, Steve Petrick is, back working. Which is always good to see. Moving on to SFU Online tournaments, Sapphire Star 13 is going to be opening up this weekend. I got the email from Mr. Petrick to say, can you start it up? And I will be starting it up for as he has requested. When it comes to online client stuff, not much happening there. Actually, I've been fixing some bugs, some blindly. And I'm hoping to fix things as much as possible and get a release out this weekend. The big problem with getting out a release is it takes 3 to 4 hours to get it all done, to get the release notes together, to compile the different versions, because it requires all those environments. Well, not quite. I need a Windows environment, a Mac environment. I need a generic environment for the Linux. Linux, I can do that on the Mac or Windows PC. When it comes to the Windows, I need a Windows PC. And when it comes to Mac, I need a Mac. that's why it takes me so long, to upgrade, to make those releases. It's a big pain in the butt. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to library, not much progress there. It's been all quiet on the Western Front. Neither FedCom or SFB has there been any progress when it comes to libraries, either corrections or additions. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, as the Money All Possible, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe on call. And tonight, well, you got me, of course. Lovely. Always me. And of course, we have Doug. How you doing, Doug?
I'm here. How are you?
Good, doing good.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Well, I hope they're doing good, because unfortunately I can't hear from them quite yet, and the chat room hasn't started to fill up. I'm hoping that they'll actually fill up, because I know I started just a little bit late, because me and Doug had a little pre-talk about his computers and having them joined to be a little better situation, possibly even better quality recording. Two, which would be awesome, but Twitch doesn't support that, and TalkShoe, it is what it is. Actually, if you have an account, in theory, you should be able to talk on TalkShoe using your computer. So if you want to look into that, you can look into that. But it would require you to actually set up a TalkShoe account. That's the only one thing. Which they're free, so shouldn't be that big of a deal. Hey, Bader. Bader, I'm not gonna try to pronounce the. I just wanted to get people to just join the chat room over on Twitch, because Twitch is over there. I got TalkShoe over here. Hopefully, the thing is, most of the time to be totally honest, these days I rarely look at TalkShoe when it comes to chats, because most of the chatting is over there. And because over there, that's Twitch. That's where most of the chatters go. Dave's going to be over there. We have a lot of times Chris shows up, and we got Iggy, and we got quite a few people who show up, and of course the more the merrier. So if you're there listening to my voice, obviously you like listening to me. If you want to listen to us live, I'd say go over to twitch.tv/sfuoncall. You will see me and you'll be able to join the chat room, and I'm sure you have loads of fun, because Lord knows that sometimes the topics there are not the topics here, so they'll go off on their own little discussion thread, and it's like, okay, that's not what the topic is for tonight. Okay, whatever. Hey, it works. But anyhow, topic. That was weird. Sorry, the car just went by, and it sounds so much like the window was open, which it shouldn't be, but I don't think it is. Okay. But anyway, wrong way. I thought it might be a cat in the window. But anyhow, the topic for this evening, actually, I want to discuss, actually, the ship that I flew. Unfortunately, Barry was not able to make it to Gamers of Winter. I apologize. And hopefully we'll have Gamers of Summer, though, which would be great. I understand that financially it's always a difficult thing, because of the number of people decreases just because of when it's run. And that's fine. If we have Gamers of Winter, I'd be happy with that.
Gamers of Summer is difficult because of the holiday.
Yeah, I know. Right, because the weekend that
it's usually like 80%.
Right. It happens that the weekend they're usually running on, which is Labor Day weekend, a lot of people, they take it away, especially because it's like the last holiday before the kids go back to school in some cases. Around here, not quite the case. What they do is they have the kids go back to school the week before Labor Day weekend, have it as a short week, have the kids. And then, that's when they kind of set up things. I don't think any of the teachers really get any work done that first few days. And then they take a break because of the holiday, and then they come back, and then they actually start school. Now, my sister in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, their school system, they start around mid-August. Is when they actually start classes. So it's a little different for them. But we're talking about here in Pennsylvania, so it is what it is. As I said, I'm fine with it. I'd like to meet up more, but the scheduling just does not work out for most people, and that is the problem. Financially, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's a family reunion and
right. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, understood, Doug. You know, and I totally understand because
yeah,
I don't want you, you know, be paying out of your own pocket just so that I can have a good time. You know,
it's also the end of like the. It's really the end of the main campaigning season, so to speak, for people going to conventions. Because it's like in the summertime, you almost can't, like, you know, swing an arm without hitting a convention weekend. If you want to go somewhere, you know, June through August, there's conventions all over the place. But it's kind of the tail end of all that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that are just kind of burned out and going to conventions. A lot of them have family reunion commitments and so on. A lot of kids are going back to school, like you said, and a lot of people going to college are actually using that weekend to scoot off to college, too. Mm-hmm. So.
That is true. That is true.
It is what it is.
Oh, yeah. Well, that always depended upon the college, because I know for Drexel, because we actually had trimesters, which are 10-week semesters. So we would actually start like the week after Labor Day, get done around mid-December, and take off until like early January, you know.
We should have a thing where people wear white shoes to the event. Because it's not after Labor Day.
Oh. What? That's wearing...
That's an old reference.
Ugh.
You ever see the movie Serial Mom?
Serial Mom,
remember
no.
Remember that movie?
No.
John Waters movie.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's about a suburban mom who gets, based off of alleged real-life stuff, who gets accused of killing all these people for various trivial reasons in the suburbs. As, like, basically a serial killer, but, like, she'll kill you because, like, you didn't put your recycles out. In the right two things, or you poked your nose in her, or you were wearing your white shoes after Labor Day, you know, that kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
It's one of those very old, very ancient, like, little tradition-y things. So you don't wear white after Labor Day, because, you know, summer's over. Okay, fine. Just a random thought. But, well, yeah, you were saying Barry came out the other day for a game on the way home from site.
Yeah, he did that a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, he was going to head out. And so I was hoping to meet up with him on Monday, but the problem is Monday, for him to stop by and play, it would be like in the mid-afternoon, which means I'd be working. So, fortunately, we were to meet up Friday night and got to play. And he played the Culligar and I played the Drex. And what I was going to have was the topic tonight is actually talk, at the very least, start off as a topic for tonight, which is talking about the Drex and their weapons and me flying it. To be honest, when it comes to the battle itself, I did not great. Actually, I did actually pretty darn good, considering that, number one, I screwed up. I think about the game again, and I really know that I screwed up. You know, I didn't take advantage of the Drex's ability to hit twice. It's nimble ship. It's computer controlled, so it gets to move last, which is always cool, always a neat thing. But you know, so and me surviving as long as I did, I was shocked. To be honest, I was really really shocked. Of how long I lasted, just because the only reason I had to finally kind of give up in the end is because the problem I had was I had like half the power, you know, and not, you know, I still had plenty of weapons. The problem is I didn't have the power to charge them. Well, he didn't have his, he had lots of power, not many weapons, but the problem is that the weapons he had, there were on shuttles. They had, he had shuttles that he launched that was going to come beat the crap out of me while I was trying to repair my ship. So I definitely lost it tremendously. My biggest mistake was the first turn. Okay, the one thing. Okay, let's see if I can bring that up. I'm just wondering if I have it here. No, I don't have it right there. Let me just see if I can find it real quick. I apologize. I should have had this prepped. There's the Caligar already. Actually, let's do this one. And that should be right. Don't mind me. There, and it should be, I think, downloads. Yeah, there it is. And da-da-da-da. And this is, let me bring this one up real fast. And big surprise, I hit the wrong one. By the way, here it is. Have a few less phasers. There's only two phaser ones up here when it comes to PWs. But if you notice, the one thing that's really crazy about this ship is the heavy weapons. Got one, two, three heavy weapons facing towards, relatively towards the front, and one in the back. Now, these are the firing arcs for those heavy weapons. I.e., this one here, that fires the hex directly in front of it. And you can actually, you can fire on these, you know off by one hex. You can fire them on the ones that are off by one hex, which is fine. Especially given that the Barry's one basically gives the ship additional ECM, and I can offset the minus one that happens because I'm offset by one hex. So, like right here, I can fire both this one and this one, those two heavy hyper cannons at your ship. So it can be really nasty at that, so which is nice. Now, the hyper, as you notice, the one thing about the heavy hyper cannons, you've got the explosive rounds do 12 per, and the arming is 2-2, which is cool because of the game starts with you holding, which is one point of energy. And you can, and according to the rules, you can be either explosive, implosive, or enveloping. Now, enveloping, this doesn't look like it does much damage. Actually, it does so much more damage. It's incredible. And that is with the heavy hyper cannons, the six here, like from range 1 to 3, which is an automatic hit, that's 6 boxes per shield. So it does 36 points of damage, with it basically being overloaded. Yes, Mike, this is Omega for those. Yeah, I agree. The moving glass also is quite an advantage. And the thing is, I didn't take advantage of that as much as I should. So, if you notice here, though, both the implosive and enveloping, both of those require ammunition. So you're limited about the number of enveloping rounds that you can fire, and or the implosive rounds you can fire. Now, the implosive rounds are mainly designed for internals. So that, let's say you fire an implosive round on a downed shield. It says it does 9 points of damage. No, it doesn't. It does 9 points of damage, but that's eight. That is 18 internals if you're firing an implosive round. If I recall correctly, the hyper cannons are always hit first when it comes to damage. They do their damage first. So, you know, if the implosive round can't get through the shield, then it doesn't do any damage. Well, it doesn't do any internal damage. But you know, if you get one point of internal damage, it's actually two internals. So it's quite it can be quite powerful. The Enveloper, as I said, is quite powerful because for the heavy Enveloper round, that's six per box. That means it's 36 total points of damage. Versus the explosive round, which only does 12, and that's directed. Now, obviously, it's not nearly as powerful as the Hellbore, where when you have one shield that's down, two-thirds of the damage goes towards that down shield. You know, it's not nearly as nice as that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, the opponent can't really fight it as easily, meaning that, you know, it's all around. It's just like enveloping plasma torpedo. Obviously, this ship has a turn mode B, which is quite cool, and as I mentioned before, it can actually do two free hits, which is also quite nice. The thing is, I did not take advantage of that because of when it comes to the initial battle pass, when I was actually starting the game, I was thinking about, okay, how do I want to start my initial battle pass? There's multiple ways of doing it. One of the ways of doing it is actually going right into the center of the board. Okay. The other one, of course, is a corner dodge. And I've found that because it depends upon what are you trying to accomplish. The good thing about a corner dodge, yes, it basically pins you into a corner, but that's what you want overall because you're going to do a battle pass anyway. And the good thing about doing a corner dodge is that your opponent comes to you, you know, sooner or later he'll come to you, whether it's going to be in that corner or along the edge or down the bottom corner. One of those two, because it's either going to be like down here or here or here. Because he'll come to you. Now, you know, the goal of doing corner dodge, you know, so you're running along the side of the map there, you know, around the side of the map. The goal there is to have plenty of room to run. When it comes to the Andromedan, I've done that before because of I want plenty of room so that I can run away from like plasma torpedoes. You know, give me plenty of time to recharge my my two-turn TR beams. Now, obviously, this is another ship that's two-turn arming. So, in theory, I could probably do the same thing. Now, to me, the interesting part about the ship, as I pointed out, is that you have heavy cannons both front and rear. So in the case of a battle pass with the Drex, you can come, depending upon how you want to do this, because in theory, you can come in, hit using like the left side of the ship, left part of the ship over here, have it so that you can get this one in, and if you get close enough, possibly even, you know, the front, you know, both the heavy hyper cannon, you know, the B and A. Okay, you can do that. And possibly even require you to do a couple impulses. Now, the tough part here is always the tough part about this maneuver that I'm going to be talking about, and that is that, one, you have to be going fast to do it. Two, you're doing it over multiple impulses, which is not always a good thing, especially with explosive rounds, where he can actually change his shield impulse to impulse. So that's a bad aspect to this, because Barry brought it up, and I went, oh, you know, which is the whole idea of hitting with, like, maybe these two, then heading or turning and getting your the right hand, right side ones there. So you start off going straight up like this, have them off your left side, hit them, turn, then have your right side hit them, and then het, so that you can rear can then hit them. Now, that's over, again, as I mentioned, that's going to be three impulses. And the problem with that is that he can change his shield that gets hit, and I'm sure he'll be willing to change the shield he's going to hit. Now, this is the, in theory, with that, if you're planning on that, what you might want to do is actually have it so that your rear heavy hypercannon is actually firing an enveloping round. The idea being that it doesn't matter if he changed his shield, you get it. Now, with Barry's updated tournament cruiser ship, he took the enveloping rounds from 8 down to 4. So you go through his enveloping rounds really, really quick. In theory, you can write it, you know, when it comes to light ones, you can fire, you know, every turn. But when it comes to developing rounds for light cannons, I'd say it's kind of a waste, just for the plain simple reason that you're limited in the number of ammo. Versus, you know, because it's developing round, the implosive round. And that's one thing, when we played, I didn't fire a single implosive round, but at the same time, it's one of those that I didn't feel confident in being able to get to another down shield. Now, I worked on it so that I could get to it, in which case I use a regular explosive round, which, of course, are free, other than the... meaning they're not limited, that the implosive and enveloping rounds are. Now, I did charge up my heavy ones with envelopers so that I could actually hit them hard. You know, have it so that if I didn't get down to that down shield, I would still get damaged. In this case, I had blown down his shield the first battle pass. So that would make sense to me. Now, as I said, in that battle, I did close in attacks, i.e., I was in the range 1 to 3. And that's because it's an auto hit. And of course, I have a few P1s. P1s can do a tremendous amount of damage really close in. These you can obviously get as they drift off in the range, they die pretty quickly. It's weird. The phaser P1s, not the phaser ones, but the phaser P1s, those are interesting in that they are, when it comes to the lower die rolls, you know, 1, 2, 3, they can really hit hard. At longer ranges, you know, as you can see here, for those who actually are on the video, 6 to 8 for a phaser P1 is 5331. For a phaser 1, it doesn't do that. It's more like, I think it's like 433211 or something along those lines. I don't actually have it on available. The other ships I have available right now are just the Omegas. So I know I can't. Mike, there are no reloads for ammo. Those are the amount of range ammo you have for that game, for that scenario. Now, to be honest, I have to look up the Drex when it comes to the ammo and the how many. Normally, my guess is that this is the normal for the tournament cruiser, i.e., this should be like the heavy cruiser type ship. I'm not sure if it's considered a heavy cruiser or considered like a destroyer, because the Drex are kind of weird. But in any case, you know, that my guess would be, because this is from Ken Burnside, who created this. And so I think having 16 impulsive rounds for hyper cannons for a heavy cruiser and 8 developing rounds for a heavy cruiser, that's normal. But I'm pretty sure that the ammo is not reloadable. This is not like drones, where you actually have them in storage and you can load them. This is how many you have in available. And when it comes to, my guess is that you might have some in cold storage, maybe, but they can't be brought out during a scenario. Whatever. I'd have to really look that up.
Well, the ammo part is also just for the specials.
Right, so only for the special round. Right, the implosive and
so
the available.
You can up the ammo. Am I right on that?
You're correct. Now,
but for the big shots, yeah, you'd have to be very sparing and careful on those. But I think if you're down to doing those, you're doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the PW3s, the phaser W3s, which are really interesting, in that range 0, they automatically hit on 4s, 50% chance of killing a regular drone, I get 4 points of damage at range 1, it's 50% chance, versus a regular phaser 3 is a 5-6 chance. Yeah, I think it's 5-6 chance. No, actually, I think it's 2/3. Because I think it's range 0 is 5-6 chance. Yeah. But now, so overall, I like the Drex. I really do. I think they're an interesting empire to fly. And as I said, that for me, the crazy thing is that the thing is that I need to play it more to give a better feeling for how to actually fly the ship properly. I like the idea of being able to do the HET, but again, there's an issue with power. You only have 38 points of power, and damn, man. The light hyper cannons cost 2 points of power to charge. I'm not sure if anybody who's on Twitch looked at this. And that is, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 heavy hyper cannons. Then, in addition to that, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, five, six of the light cannons. Now, that is a total of 10. That's right, 10 heavy weapons, in theory. The light hyper cannons, yeah, they do 4 points of damage. Really? Your phasers do more damage. At the range that we're talking about, because we're talking about, okay, range six is 4 points of damage. Yeah, the phasers can do more damage at range eight, at range six, than the hyper cannons. Yeah, CPU, that's used for command and control, which is interesting. It gets hit on bridge, emergency bridge. Okay, I gotta think about this. Not flag bridge. And so what's the one that does? I think it might get hit flag bridge, but it doesn't get hit on Oxcon. I think I got that right. Basically, it's a control. And the CPU, you know, that uncontrolled direct ship would be an interesting ship. I'm not sure. And I usually don't worry about uncontrolled ships, to be honest. Because CPU, okay, you got six boxes of CPU, which is around standard number of command spaces in a ship. This versus if you're flying like a Orion. Orion is it's a little short. If I recall correctly, they've got, I think, four control spaces. So in theory, they could become uncontrolled. Well, you know, most ships, it's really hard to make them uncontrolled. Yeah, it'd be interesting. Star Trek, Starfleet, through the ages, from as early as we can go. Like no one's gone before. But anyhow, so, you know, the phasers are good, but, you know, as I said, the light hypercans are they don't do much damage. You know, it almost seems like, if you think about it, and I'm thinking about it now, which is possibly only loading, you know, charging, what, two or four of the light hyper cannons, and let the other four just go by the wayside. Of course, here's the thing. Which is, these guys, you've got two light hyper cannons facing the rear, so it is. One of the things I like about the ship is that ability. That's the ability to fly away and still engage the enemy. Still engage your opponent's ship, because of, even if they're chasing you, you can fire weapons at it. You know, I mean, decent weapons. You've got one heavy hypercannon and you've got two light hypercannons. And if you can, if all you need to do is, if he's chasing you, beat the crap out of his shield number one while he's trying to chase you, or shield number two or shield number six, depending upon what the facing is. As I said, assuming he's chasing you. And so it definitely, it's one of those things that actually is direct fire and has a deterrent. Has a deterrent on not chasing it. You know, assuming that you don't do the battle plan, which was brought up by Gary. Sorry, I wanted to check that. Barry, not Gary. I thought of Gary, that's why I wanted to check to see if anyone was here, if he was here. But Barry, which was the whole idea of heading away and then firing the rear one. In a way, it might be a good idea not to fire the rear one, but to have it as a deterrent to your opponent have so he doesn't chase you. I think that's actually an interesting idea. Now, obviously, one way to really make sure your opponent doesn't chase you, knock out his shield number one. You know, so it might actually behoove you to use the heavy rear one just if it can do that coup de grace of knocking down the final box of the shield number one. Yeah, you can repair it, but you know that means he has to slow down and repair it, and still he's not going to be very likely to want to actually chase you down and have his shield number one exposed if he can avoid it. Now let me. This is the ship he was flying approximately. The phase is a little different when it comes to the numbers. But if you look at some, when it comes to the color guard, if you look at some of this, it's just nuts. The automatic cannons, not bad. 1-3, you know, 1-5 to hit. And actually, a lot of times we were engaging really close, to be honest, from 1-3. He didn't mind it. I didn't mind it. So, you know, he'd be 1-5. The thing is, he never missed with his antimatter cannons. So he was kept on doing constantly 6, and every once in a while he'd do 12. So he'd do an overload shot on me. He never used the antimatter cloud generator, which is fine with me. Actually, no, he did use it once, but I got rid of his antimatter cannon generator pretty quick. Now, these are the annoying ones, which is these phaser M's. The phaser M's, M1 and M3, they are not a table phaser, where, you know, depending upon what you roll, you can either do better or worse. This is a to hit. So when it comes to the M1s, out to range 2, they're automatic hits. So at range 2, if he had 5 phaser 1s facing me, he did 25 points of damage, period. There was no question in that. And same for the down here when it comes to the M3s, which is all the way out to range 3, is guaranteed damage. Now, obviously, the damage varies based on range, but I mean, that makes it really annoying and difficult, because now we're no longer flying a battle of percentages, of possibilities, of probabilities. We are dealing in absolutes to a certain degree. When it comes to the phasers, they're absolutes. If you get to a certain range, boom, automatic damage. There's no question whether it's going to be hitting you or not. It just does damage. Versus the auto cannons, the antimatter cannons. I think about ACs, I think about auto cannons, which is actually from BattleTech. Autocannons are from BattleTech. And you know, so you have a chance of actually missing. Of course, as I mentioned, he never missed. And so at the end of it, he had warp power, but not many weapons left, because I kept on knocking out his weapons, which made things interesting. So overall, you know, I like the Drex. I want to fly it more. As I told Barry, it's like, you know, who was it? Oh, it was Peter. I think it was. I'm looking for the Landa. I want to say is this one. No, it's a key. I don't see. Maybe that's something that Barry himself made up, which is probably the case. Because this is L'Oreal. Oh, no, Alanda. There it is, right there. The crazy part about these ships is this. That is, okay, you've got these plasma whips. You got, you know, four plasma whips. But, and then, yeah, plasma whips, you got, this is a Lunda host tournament hunt ship that we're talking about. I brought it up just because of Barry and I discussed it, and I thought it might be interesting just at least to bring it up. And that is, you was telling me how Peter McKee never lost in the ship. And one of the reasons there is the ability to heal. You can actually, given, see, it has healing of 6. That means you can actually fix up to 12 boxes, which is nuts. But here's the thing, if you haven't noticed, there are no phaser weapons on this ship. None. It's got has your plasma whip table, which you can, if you want to, you can consider those kind of plasma whips. If you look at the table, they're good to out the range 4, which means they're for one thing. They're for defense is their main use. They do up to 3 points of damage, up to 5 points of damage range 0, up to 4 points of damage range 1. Their average damage looks like to me, around 2, a little less than 3, like 2 3/4, I'm guessing at the moment in time. Because it's 4, 3, 3, 2, 2, 2, 2. And if I want to, I could actually add that up, which is 6 and 6, which is 12 plus 4 is 16, divided up by 6. See, that's the gotcha. So I think that might make it 2.5. That doesn't sound right. 2.5 would be all 3s. So it's a little more than 2.5 average. But when it comes to bioelectric bolts, if you look at it, this is based on energy that you put into the weapon. And so the bioelectric bolts for the Landa, Alunda. They basically, the one weapon acts as both a phaser weapon and a heavy weapon. It all depends on one critical thing, and that is how much energy do you put into it. And that defines what kind of weapon it is. Now, if you notice, there's only, for this one, there are 10 of these guys. Now, I know Barry talked about, I forget if the one he currently has is 8 or 10. I want to say it's 8, and they tried to bring it up to 10, and it was too powerful. But it's, to me, I was talking to Barry, and I told him that I really felt like that kind of weapon is, because the Alunda have only biobolts, that one kind of weapon, they don't have phasers, it makes it really hard to balance it overall, because of it also, the bioelectric bolts get hit like on everything. I know it gets on phasers and torps. I forget if it gets hit on drones or not. I don't remember what plasma whips get hit on. Barry told me. I totally forgot. We were talking about this real quick, and I'll mention it, which is the plasma cloud. They have a plasma cloud generator. He said that it takes a lot of power. I don't know the power required for it. And the way he described it, we talked about it. The way he described it, it's, to me, it seemed like that the plasma cloud, the generator, and what, which is, you know, it generates this cloud here. Now, I felt like, given how much it cost, power wise, because Barry said it costs a lot of power. I forget how much. And that is that it's mainly designed for fleet battles, and in fleet battles, it's meant as a kind of getaway device because of it cuts back on the amount of damage that, well, it, I forget if it produces ECM or it just automatically does an offset or what, but it basically reduces the amount of damage that that the ship will take if the weapon goes through a cloud hex. So, you know, and from my understanding, it's high power. So, to me, that says that it's defensive, and it's a last resort defensive weapon. When you instead of putting energy into your weapons, you put it into the system, so that you can shoot it and just start running away, because anything that's going to be fired at it is going to have to go through that cloud. So, you know, in a tournament play, you're playing in the fishbowl. And the fishbowl doesn't make nearly as much sense because I forget how long I'd wait. As I mentioned, it comes out the rear. So it's not like a Tholian caster where you can set it up, you know, in front of you and then kind of fly behind it. You would actually, if you want to use this in a kind of offensive, quote unquote, offensive manner, what you have to do is you have to go like towards the center of the board and het and fire the plasma cloud generator. At that point, okay, you can get away, but what are you doing? You know, it makes no sense because I actually have to read the rules because I'm not sure if the plasma cloud actually does any damage to an opponent's ship. Because if it does, then that makes sense. It would force the opponent to go around it. But still, even if it does force them to go around it, it's not going to be worth the wasting of the HET in that scenario, you know. So, and as Dave mentioned out there, Olanda are use the space whales for their ships. So, leads me to believe that basically these are one of those symbiotic ships. The dragons. Let me see. I know it's beginning with B. I don't think he has it. I don't see it. Thank you, Dave. The Branthidion, which are dragons. And basically, in the case of the dragons, they actually attach a ship to the dragon. So they have places for crew quarters and weapons and things like that, in addition to the normal weapons that the dragon has. And yeah, they use the Bonobonis dragons, which is interesting. And that's what, to me, it looks like what the Olanda are, is the same kind of deal, though I'm not sure if that the whales are Bonobonis. My guess is that they're not. I'm not sure if they can even hat, to be honest. Yeah. But anyhow, so, you know, because of the bioelectric bolts, it makes it really difficult to overall balance. So, you know, I wish Barry luck, because Barry said that Peter has never lost in a ship. And of course, I asked him, I was like, well, okay, other than you, has he played anyone else? And he said, no. Which leads me to believe that, as I told Barry, that brings up an interesting predicament. Because is it the ship is, that Peter's really familiar with the ship and can play it very well? Or is it that the ship cannot be balanced? Or is it that Peter knows Barry very well? Because, see, that's part of tactics overall, is not just to know what your ship can do and what your ship should do against a certain other ship, but you have to also know the mindset of the captain you're flying against, and therefore what tactics would best apply to that captain. And given that Peter's been flying almost exclusively against Barry, you know, it's possible that it's just that Barry doesn't have the knowledge to when it comes to tactics against Peter, and especially against this ship. So, and I just one thing I mentioned to Barry also, which when we talked about the Drex, and that is, I'm not like Paul Scott. Paul Scott is one of those people who could look at the rules, look at the ships, evaluate it, and then go, you know, this is what you're going to do. But it's like, well, because he was a great tactician, really understood the rules. Paul Scott is also a lawyer, so that's part of his job, is looking for understanding the law, you know, in this case the rules, and applying that and seeing what's the best way to achieve your goals through those rules, you know, which always seems interesting if you really think about it. And that is, some people don't say there are no rules, but, you know, rules are a good thing overall. So anyway, I think I'll end it there. I know we started a little bit late, but I don't see it as much more to talk about. One, about the Drex. Two, talk about any other subject. I don't think there's really much time to talk about any other subject at the moment. So I think I'll just wrap it up for this evening. I hate that, because I know I did it. You okay there, Doug?
Yeah, I'm relatively fine, but thanks for having us on.
Yep, no problem. Right, you have a good night. So, had a relatively short podcast tonight, mainly talking about the Drex, some of Yolanda, and also the Color Guard, because Lord knows the Color Guard looks interesting. As I said, the when it comes to up close, it reminds me more of Warp War than it does the Starfleet Battles. Because normally Starfleet Battles, one of the things that's part of it is the die roll. How, you know, nothing is guaranteed. Nothing. I mean, look at most of the weapons. There's rare that a weapon is guaranteed to hit. The only time it's guaranteed to hit is like range one. Actually, I think you're range one or range zero of a disruptor, that's guaranteed to hit. But, you know, that's crazy close. So, you know, it, unlike the Color Guard, which you can be out to like range two, yeah, it's pretty darn close. But as I said, you know, I flew pretty close to him, which I don't think was a very good idea anyway. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.